welcome to another episode of Am I the Bullcast, the only podcast about Magic the Gathering that's ever happened and will continue to happen. I'm your host, Mike Carrozza, a.k.a. Mark Carbonzo, who you might know from CommandersHerald.com and stand-up comedy world. And, you know, normally I say, as always, my producer, Morgan Sanchez, is joining us today. However, today is a bit different. Morgan is unavailable, and so I thought, rather than doing a bookending of an episode to get it out to you on time alone, I thought, let me call up a buddy of mine and see if he wants to jump on this thing. And so, friend of the show, great pal, jumping on, you might know him from another episode of Ember the Bullcast, it's Jake Brown. Hi, Jake.
Ahoy, hoy.
Hey, buddy.
I'm here to get to the bottom of the mysterious disappearance of Morgan.
Yeah, Morgan. Morgan's working a lot, is what it is. Morgan's doing okay, but like her schedule is wild right now, so we couldn't find the time.
I feel that.
Yeah, yeah, you do. It's a crazy time of year for all of us, and luckily we found the time to carve out so we could make this happen today. Jake, my sweet, sweet boy, you've been busy. I know you've been busy. You got something going on today and actually in recent days that you've got an announcement out and stuff is new and happening. I'm dancing. Jake, you want to tell everybody what you got going on? What's keeping you so busy?
Yes, of course. So I've been doing Mana Club, which is a Substack that's basically a twice weekly magazine for Magic. It's my way of like bridging the gap of... Say you're interested in Magic, but you're not terminally online. Well, I am your terminally online friend that goes and finds everything that you would want to know about. So I will write a column about like, oh, here's a cool art piece that just sold for $15,000. And here are my thoughts about this really interesting Command Zone episode. But also... why does Archfiend of the Dross need like a little cod piece?
Oh God, what? I haven't seen this art up close. Is that really?
It's terrifying. It's pointy in a way that makes you feel like it's a defensive thing.
Yo, it does. Okay, I hadn't considered that. I thought maybe that might be on the backside and perspective and whatnot, but that is definitely on the front piece.
You go for a kick and you're losing a foot.
I'm telling you, know what, but that's what you get when you tussle with a Phyrexian demon. Think about this though. Okay, so this came out in Phyrexia All Will Be One, mm-hmm. 2023, has been in standard for so long, all of a sudden takes off because Dimir Demons is kicking off because of Unholy Annex, and you wouldn't know that without reading Jake's Mana Club. If you're not, unless you're terminally online like I am, I have to find out by watching Worlds. Like, I'm invested in stuff, but I had a buddy of mine who was like, what's the deal with this card being expensive now? I just thought it looked cool. And it's like, well,
that's totally.
I had somewhere to point you.
Yeah. When I don't do a ton of finance stuff. There's usually like a little finance note in there every, you know, twice a week. But,
sure.
Okay. So it's like, if you're not a fan of long form writing, you can just skip around, but each issue is between like 3,000 to 4,000 words, so it's a lot.
That's a long one.
Yeah.
To give you guys perspective, usually my articles on Commander's Herald for Am I the Bolus, I try to keep close to like 1,000, maybe 1,200. So that's a pretty long entry.
Yeah, it's really, I found a growing community with IBS sufferers because it's really something to do while you have a long time to sit.
Wow. What a way to look at this. This is a fun perspective to have. So you're
people,
those afflicted by IBS.
IBS, people with long, cool commutes that don't involve driving.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Toll booth operators, another big one.
Oh, wow. God, I hadn't even considered how much downtime those guys must have. I just thought it was like constant.
I think some, but I would try and be the surly toll booth operator, so I'm not getting a ton of action through there. Like, listen,
if
you have to see me 5 days a week, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the booth number two, because number three is always that guy who's upset I'm here.
Who's reading his Magic articles.
Yeah. He's scrolling, going, Archfiend of the Dross does look like it's got a cod piece. Just screaming at his phone.
Why is he so modest? It's probably...
What do you mean, bringing back Bandas Commander? That's a fun... I like that you've been doing this because, like, obviously, you're a big fan of, like, threads on Twitter. Like, when... I always love catching a thread while you're posting it because I could see it happening in real time, being like, you're doing some limited analysis on what's going on in Duskmourne or something and being like, okay, so we really had this set wrong at the beginning and now it's locked in tight. You're like, so here's why with all the data from this and that. And you're like, all right, how do you get through? So you got to go through this post and this post. Just put it in an article. And that's what you're doing. And I like that a lot.
I'm going to reverse engineer it now and take articles and post them as Twitter threads since they're already written and be like, hey, if you liked this, it's been an article for a week. Go read.
There we go.
And it's Substack. Free. If you go to manaclub.substack.com, it is 100% free to subscribe. If you want to pay more, great. But I like being able to not have to tweet about things. And threads are a terrible format for like a long form writer like me.
Truly. And you know what, though? It's also like it keeps you off of Twitter. Can we do that, please? Ooh. Can we do that?
Tremendous upside.
Huge upside. I just think that it's like, man, Twitter had one of the days that united us the most recently. And I'm not going to get too into it. But I feel like that's the one day I've had, or like the one stretch of days I've had in a long time on Twitter where I felt like, oh, okay, this is a bearable space. Then Blue Sky feels like it's still got kid gloves on, so I feel like a little rudderless lately.
Yeah,
with my internet.
I need like the in-between, which feels like Reddit lately. I don't know. But it truly, it was like, I don't know. I want a website where sometimes I can celebrate a guy getting COVID. Does that make me awful?
Does that make me bad?
Does that make me the bolus?
Right. So it's like, oh, look at this. I'm invoking the Solani mantra of context. What's the context matters here, I guess? You know, I think what it is like, I do want a place where it's okay to sometimes just outright dunk on somebody with the meanest insult you can think of. And it just feels like if I did that on Blue Sky, somebody would be like, you know, that's a person behind that screen that you're talking to, and you probably just made their day worse. And I'm like, I'm saying this to Ben Shapiro. do you really need me to, you know, when you come up with like a fun insult you think is creative and you're like, I'm going to try start using this more, and then it stops making sense. I thought of one I liked a lot. I don't know if it makes any sense, but still.
Oh, hit me.
When you run sideways, does it whistle? What's happening? Running sideways is already such a dumb thing, but it's also like, does it? I need to know now. Is it just like a straight shot down the line?
I feel like that has to be a proverb. That sounds like a Russian thing where it's like his head whistle when wind blow. You're like, what?
Yeah, something like that. Wait, yeah, that's got to be something like that. Or what is it? You've spent your life chasing common sense but never caught it. You know, that kind of.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do feel like Blue Sky makes me want to be less mean to people, but the thing is, I'm only ever mean to people that I think deserves it, and I don't see those people on Blue Sky. So I'm also like, the only people that I do get that urge for are people who are being like police on an app.
I have a bad news for you. They're coming for Blue Sky, baby.
Of course they are. Anyway, I'm on Blue Sky. You can check me out at my Carosa.
I'm at jakebrown.com. Just telling people I hope they get stuck on a malfunctioning bidet. I feel like that's the level of like Blue Sky
insult
you can
have. I like that one though, because it makes you feel like you have to think about it a little harder. Like, what's the malfunction gonna be like if it's?
Would you stay? You're priced into sitting at that point.
I guess so, right? How is the malfunction? Is it too hot?
In my head, it's always that it won't stop.
That's also a good one. That's a funny one. Yeah. It's ice cold, but if you get up, you ruin the bathroom. Oh, no.
Lucy.
Anyway, we got to jump off of this. We can't stay on the bidet the whole time. So, man, Mana Club, make sure to subscribe. ManaClub.substack.com. Make sure to subscribe to that. And it's free. It's available to you for free. And you'll get to read some great articles by our sweet boy Jake here. We got a call about right now, but I do want to shout out our sponsor again, as always, our sponsor, cardsphere.com. You can check out our referral link in the description. Ooh. Check out our referral link in our link tree, which I have to update today with that. We have a link tree now, which is linktree.com. You know how they do it. linktr.ee/ Am I the Bolus?
It's just I know.
It just feels so silly. And Am I the Bolus is our link tree. So go ahead and follow. Use that for anything. Am I the Bolus? Am I the Bolcast related? And that's where you can also find, if you don't find it in the description on YouTube or in the description of the podcast, which is where it is, let me make it even easier for you. Go to our link tree. Our referral link is right there. I'm so happy that we do have this referral link. I'm thrilled about it.
I love it. How else would someone find Cardsphere? You got to click the link, people.
You got to click the link on the friggin' description. We put it in every episode. I spend the time. I get in there and I go, this is where I'm going to put the referral link that we've worked so hard to get from our and I'm saying proud sponsor, and I haven't taken their temperature in a little bit, so I have to double check that, and I don't want to put words in their mouth, so I'm just going to say our sponsor, whether or not they're proud of it is up to them, and I hope they are. But Cardsphere.com is fantastic, and we don't have Morgan here today to talk about her journey, because she's collecting all of Odyssey Block.
Oh.
In foil. So she's doing Odyssey Block foil because that's when she started. And that's a block I have a lot of fondness for. So I'm with her on it. But I don't think I have a set that I would do that for yet. But if I had to choose, I think it might be Odyssey Block, actually. It is. The foils are striking. The cards are sometimes really bad, sometimes really good. You know? You making faces at Odyssey Block. Why? What's your instinct here?
I don't... I don't remember Odyssey Block at all. That was like in my gap years.
Odyssey, so like, Torment, Judgment.
Man, everything was more metal back then. Oh, all right.
Yeah,
so
dog.
How do you use cards? Then Cardsphere, the way I understand it, because I have an account there, find me at Uncle Cardboard or / Uncle Cardboard, however it works. So you can put up a list of like things you want and then people send you offers. So I put up like, hey, I need this Odyssey foil, and people hit you with them.
So basically you put up your haves and your wants, right? So if I have in my wants and I set a threshold price for my wants being like, I would like to buy a Plagon Lord of the Beach, but I'm not going any higher than $5. Well then somebody who's like going through the standing offers. Yeah. Standing offers will be like, well, okay, well I'm selling my Plagon. This guy wants a Plagon and it falls within my the bracket that I have it listed at. I'm going to send it. So it's going to be like, boom, there it is. Send it off. Or you can kind of go into other people's lists and put them on and kind of check out like you're doing it on another, you know, it's like an online shopping. But you have your list of haves, you have your list of wants. And so that's how it works. It's a trading platform where your cards are basically your wallet. And it's made a lot of trades easier for me because I'm culling my collection lately. I'm going through it and I am really just trying to get the value back on some stuff. Like I've got a Swan Song on my desk right now. I don't play Swan Song. I've got a couple consigned to memories. I don't have room for that in my decks. I don't play them, but a ton of people who are way more competitive than I am do. And so I'm going to pop them online, put them on Cardsphere, get my money's worth out of them, and then use that to buy, well, you know, anything that I want, really. I got my eye on a Ripple Foil Siege Gang Lieutenant. We'll see if I can pick that up from Cardsphere. I've got my eye on Rev Tithe Extractor. threshold set to $10. Thank you very much. When that card dips, I'm going to be a happy man. Yeah. $70 right now. That's insane. Anyway, point is, Cardsphere, thank you so much for sponsoring us again. And check out that referral link. Guys, please sign up for Cardsphere. You got to get your cards here. Cardsphere, get your cards here. We also came up with that little slogan for him. I thought, yeah, fun.
Put a beat behind it. Ship it.
Yeah, I don't know that I have anything that I could use right now. But, you know, I do have one thing.
Of course
that
not.
Maybe as a joke.
You've got to compose for that. That's how good that is. You wouldn't just slap any old beat behind it.
I think we got to try it, though. Hold on a second. Let's see if this will work. Cardsphere. Why don't you get your cards here? That's it. That's what's up. That's what I'm thinking. Anyway. Oh, look at... Okay, well, now we got a... Okay, it took us long enough to get the call, but we're going to get this call. Let's take this call right now. Jake, we'll see you on the other side. I'm going to chat with whoever's on the line. Let's get to it. It's time for a caller on the line. Who do we got? Who's calling in?
Hey, it's Aaron from the Spike Feeders. I'm giving you a call.
Aaron! Yeah. Aaron from the Spike Feeders. No way, you're calling us?
Yeah, calling you.
I'm not, what a time. I can't, but so happy to hear from you. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing amazing, man. I feel good.
It's good to hear.
A lot, but you know, a lot of things to be excited for. Dating the episode a little bit, it's fall, so there's that like magic in the air of, you know, you go to school in the fall, right? You're like, oh, now, why is it New Year's now? It makes no sense to me. Yeah. We've been conditioned that way all the time. That's why I have all this rejuvenating energy, and I'm very excited for what's to come. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm so happy you called in. I was just watching some Spike Feeders videos.
Oh, yeah.
Before you called in, and I think noticeably this was when you were away for a little bit because you weren't in this one. But
I've been away for a bit, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got a hell of a crew over at the Spike Feeders.
Great team. I'm able to disappear for a month, and they keep the wheels on, which is
fantastic. How many, officially speaking, how many Spike Feeders are there?
So there's eight members officially, and then we have an editor who's actually been in recent episodes too, Phil.
Right.
Him and I have been friends actually for way longer than I've been part of the channel. But yeah, he's officially editor, but it's starting to show up in more episodes. And then we have a handful of guests that are kind of recurring, but again, eight members and editor.
Gorgeous. I love that. And all Winnipeg guys. Hey, all folks from Winnipeg.
All from Winnipeg. Great place. That's awesome. Winnipeg, Manitoba. We have, I don't know, we have the mint.
we have a mint? Wait, a what?
we have the mint that makes money, but I don't know what else Winnipeg has. We were the soybean capital for a long time. Otherwise, not very, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Winnipeg is known, the rest of Canada knows Winnipeg for being quite dangerous and quite cold.
Yeah, not great.
Right, the reputation isn't stellar, but hey, you know what else? It's given us the Spike Feeders, so we can be excited about that.
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier I was just watching some videos, but I want to say, like, by Alex from the Spike Feeders on the podcast a couple weeks back, and he was delightful, as you'd expect him to be. And we got to talking after the episode about how you are like the resident brew guy. You love, you're a big brew head. You're the mastermind brewer. And I just went off about how every deck that I see on the Spike Feeders play channel is just phenomenal. Everything works incredibly well. And that's all you, that's like, this is what you do. This is your contribution to the channel.
It's a big part of what I do. I don't do all of it. I do a lot of it, especially recently, but it's a big undertaking that I've picked up in the last 6-ish months. And it's admittedly one of my favorite things that I like to do. I like building decks maybe more than like playing them. So,
dude, I get that. I get that so much. I'm with you. How many decks do you have brewing right now for yourself? Not for the channel. If you were talking for yourself, do you have any that you like?
I always, you know what? My day job is I manage a game store. I manage an LGS. Like, okay. I've been doing that for 15 years.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's really, really easy to get sucked into building stuff when you're just kind of always surrounded by it. You know, as my day job, my hobby, and other day job. You know?
Yeah, yes.
It's a lot of what I do. Yeah. So I'm always kind of thinking about it. I'm picking up cards almost every other day to either think of building something or building something. So at any point, I'm working on three lists at any given time.
Easily.
And then I have 8 to 12 physical versions of those decks put together most of the time. But I never get rid of anything. I kind of go in and out. I disassemble and reassemble to upgrade or improve in the future. But yeah, like I said, it's my favorite thing to do by a wide margin.
I feel you, man. I'm in the middle of, I'm currently building, as we speak, three Dimir-based decks right now. I'm like, I got Rassilon, the War President from the Doctor Who, the Marchesa, Dealer of Death from Old Cowboy Plane, Thunder Junction Marchesa, and then DK from Unfinity, the Attractions Dimir guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know why I'm on such a Dimir kick or like a Dimir-centered kick, but those three were speaking to me, and that's what I got on the docket right now. Brewing is a lot of fun. You get to really put your head to work, and you find, like, this is going to be cool, and I can't wait for this to come together. And when it does in a game, then you get to be like, yeah, I meant for this. This was the plan the whole way.
As designed, you know, like we drew it up.
Yeah. And I got to say, like, it happens a lot where some cool stuff is happening on the channel, and I'm like, man, now this gets me so hyped about, like, I'd never considered building this guy. Now I kind of want to try this deck out. And so luckily you guys leave the lists in the show notes so you could go and use the playtester. But I got to say, like, Modern Horizons 3, I copied all those lists to play around with. Imskir, I looked at, I was like, man, I'm disappointed in the Rakdos legend from this set. But you played on the video for Modern Horizons 3, and I was like, wow, this looks so cool. Why am I being so mean about it? This guy rules.
Yeah, I mentioned it in the episode, but Imskir is... identical to Bosch Iron Golem from a long time ago, who was like, was one of the, I think one of the earliest decks, like, of my own decks that I put on the channel. And it's like a deck that I've played since the beginning times. It's right around when I started playing Magic a lot when Mirrodin came out. Mm. So yeah, that deck will always kind of mean something to me. But Imskir is a good, arguably significantly better version of that commander. even though I still play Bosch, even though to this day, even though Imskir is most likely just better.
Yeah, no. I will have to say that Imskir is. I'll give it to you. Imskir is a better bot. Yeah. I think we can say
it. It's just a sad reality. You know,
who cares if it's better? That's your deck. Yeah. You get to. You know what I mean? It's always so fun to watch somebody pull out their deck, and you're like, "Wait, this is your commander?" And you're like, "Yeah, I love this deck." You're like, okay, I love it. I can't wait to see it. That's what I get when I pull out Lizolda the Blood Witch. People are like, huh, has this ever been reprinted? It's like, no, why should it be? Who cares?
Just Ascension,
I love this card,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. Only 20 years now.
You know, makes me feel,
isn't that crazy?
Very old.
I know. I feel it's absurd. It's nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you're a big brew guy. I'm so enamored by your ability to seek the synergies in, like, you know, in ways that don't feel obvious. Like, I obviously, like, I'm an enfranchised player. I'd have to say that if you're listening to this, you're probably also deeply into Magic. And so if you're looking for something and you're thinking, where can I find some gameplay videos where I'm gonna see, yes, the stuff that is gonna be good for a deck that if I ever want to put it together, the stuff that'll feel like, yes, this should go in, but also a little bit outside the box in a way that's super cool and functionally, like, fantastic, like, amazing work here, buddy. Like, your Shil Gengar deck was also great. The Necro Bloom popped off. Like, they all went ham. And I got to commend you. Your deck brewing style is so fun. It's so synergy forward, and it's something that I envy.
No, it's something that...
I warned you ahead of time that I would compliment you too much.
You might
did say that.
Yeah, it's something that I like a lot, and a lot of it just comes through, like, kind of years of... being old certainly helps. Playing Magic for far too long, so and like, I guess just playing a lot of Commander, I build by a certain set of, maybe not rules, but I build in a way that I think kind of creates the most enjoyment for myself, my opponents, the people watching, everyone kind of along the way, that isn't just focused on doing the most powerful or most optimal. You know, I'll trade often synergy or the theme for power. You know, not just shoehorning in Demonic Tutors, Cyclonic Rift, Smothering Tithe, yada yada,
agreed,
into every deck, because I think that's way less interesting.
Agreed.
and I'll trade. I'll play much more. Like I'll play Diabolic Intent over Demonic Tutor because it's more thematic if I'm playing like an Aristocrats deck, you know?
Yeah.
And I think this, when you kind of make more of those trade offs along the road, it just creates a more interesting experience for both you and them. And over time, it seems to work out. People seem to enjoy it. I like it a lot. So
oh yeah,
I'm happy it's working.
I'll say, I think part of what's so attractive to me in your deck building is that I feel that sense too, that you are not necessarily flavor forward, but like synergy forward, right? Like yeah. It's not like I'm not looking at this list and being like, there's every tutor. All right, another Dockside deck. You know, oh, where's the loop? There it is. Every infinite combo available. It's in here. No, it's like, okay, here's a card that for sure Aaron has had on his table and has been like, one day I'll find a deck where this works exactly perfectly. And then it's like, here we go, prize statue. You're not just a Jan Jansen card. Now you're an Imskier. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's the kind of thing that's like, we play so much Magic, you end up with so many cards, and you're like, this was a cool card for this pre-release deck, or I opened this card and I always had some sort of affinity for it, but where does it belong in a Commander setting? And you're like, it doesn't really quite get there, but you find it. And that's very fun. That's very fun.
It's very, super rewarding. Like, it's super fun to do.
Absolutely. I mean, but you know, it's not to say that you won't include a card in a deck when it like fits perfect. Like, the Vihan deck from Outlaws of Thunder Junction being like, treasures are outlaws. It's not like you're gonna say, well, no Smothering Tide. It's like, actually, this is the Smothering Tide deck. If there ever was one. Yeah,
great example. I actually have that in a note somewhere that I play that card specifically because it ties well together.
Exactly.
And I play like cards like Field of Dead and the Necrobloom deck because it's thematic, right? But you could put it, you can put it in arguably any commander deck from monocolor to five color. But it's way less interesting. So again, I shoehorn it in when is on brand.
I live for it. That's the way I like a brew. That's what I'm into, man. I'll say you mentioned you've been playing for a long time. When did you get into playing Magic?
So it was either late 99 or early 2000. Mercadian Masks was the newest set.
Yo, okay. I did 7th edition and Mercadian Masks kind of jumbled together, but same time. That's so sick.
I remember we actually filmed a 50,000 AMA not long ago, and I remember I brought up specifically that even though Masks was the newest set, I bought versus Legacy packs because at the time Squeeze on the booster pack for Mercadian Masks, which I thought looked lame, and Beast of Burden looked super cool, so I bought versus Legacy packs. And I remember the first rare I ever opened was Hidden Gibbons, and I had no idea what that card did for years. I'm like, I don't know what this thing is. I'm not even pretending to know. I was moving on.
Buddy, I get that. I mean, Squee did not look fun at all, but then you're also like, is this, what else is in here? You know what I mean? You're like, you open a Squee, you're like, how is this good? It just interrupts. Okay, fine. Now you got an extra card in hand to discard.
I play that card a lot now. I play Squee a lot.
Same.
Yeah.
I got my discard deck on my desk right now.
I own many Mercadian Masks, Squees specifically.
You know what I did when, okay, so Squee looked ridiculous, but you know what card was like extra ridiculous when you realize what it is General's Regalia, a 3-mana artifact that you pay 3 to redirect damage from you to like a creature, and it's Squee's like royal garb.
Yeah, he's like outfit situation.
Yeah, and I loved that they made a card where it's just like, okay, so you painted Squee wearing this. We love it. Can we have it on a rack though? Because we have an idea.
Yeah.
And like I said, like I appreciate this kind of brew. I saw this card and I was like, I'm gonna find somewhere for it. Let me go ahead and buy a foil copy of it now. It's only 30 cents at the time. And then I get it and then end up putting together a Brash Taunter themed deck with Savine the Chronoclasm. And General's Regalia in that, beautiful, perfect card.
Yeah, I ended up building a Squee Commander deck actually when 10th edition came out, and they gave new artwork. And this is like in the much more Wild West of Commander. So you play it, let it die, just so you can get it in your hand, and then discard it to things. Like,
nice.
I can't for the life of me remember some of them, but there's it's like a Shadowmoor rare, I think it is. It's like discard a card at random in your hand, and it deals damage equal to CMC. And like, I'm going to discard, deal 3 whole damage, and then get it back next turn, and then do it again.
Wait, what is this card? That sounds so fun.
Not Stormbind. There's a bunch of bad.
There's Pyromancy from like Legacy that does something similar.
Maybe, yeah, but there's just a bunch of bad cards that like, and especially for 2010, they're especially bad. That have some sort of like, when you cast it, discard a card, or this is a cost to discard a card.
Right.
And you just use Squee.
Cards had to have drawbacks.
Yeah, and Squee was like my free out. You know, so the deck was not good. But I really wish I had that list. Thankfully, I've actually been sandbagging a lot of these, but I have Commander Deck list from 2009. Commander becoming an official format from Wizards, pre Command Tower, pre all that stuff. And so they're all from 2009 when I first started playing Commander a lot. And now it's been 15 years, so I'm lining up an episode. It's gonna be good of all 2009 deck lists. Of you know what Magic used to be, this model battle cruiser, everyone playing back cards is great.
I dig that, man. That's the fun part. You find Magic is a moving puzzle. Mm-hmm. Playing Commander is like a moving puzzle times four, but like, man, it's just so rewarding when you can figure it out and make it happen. Mm-hmm. I found the card you were talking about. Shadowmoor was correct. Null Spine Invocation, one red enchantment. X, discard a card with CMC or mana value X. No Spine Invocation deals X damage to target creature or player, which is errated to any target.
Yeah, that card is bad.
But
it's like, I mean, crazy bad.
To have to pay the cost of the thing that you're discarding is nuts.
Yeah.
Because this has been a bit of a theme with my Rakdos the Muscle deck, is that everything is so high CMC, but it gets reduced.
Oh, yeah, Rakdos is sweet.
It's so sweet. So I had Pyromancy in there and Heretic's something. Oh, God.
Guitar?
No. Heretic's Punishment.
Oh, sure.
Which is a 5-mana enchantment that for 3 and a red, Innistrad, choose target creature player, then mill 3, and it deals damage equal to the highest mana value of those cards to that creature or player.
I only know this thing because Jim plays it in his...
It's so fun.
Sakashima Vial Smasher high CMC deck.
Hell yeah. See, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That this is the only deck that I ran an epic card in, which is the what's it called? The red epic card that every turn it's Undying Flames, 4 red sorcery, remove cards from the top of your library until you remove a non-land card. Undying Flames deals damage to target creature or player equal to its converted mana cost.
Yeah.
And then epic. So
I couldn't
the rest
tell you
the game,
text of that card for sure.
Buddy, it's so bad, but it's the perfect deck for it, and you want to do something silly, and that's what I want.
Great
mechanic,
that's
why one of the worst of all time. I think Patrick Sullivan went on such a rant about epic on the Resleevables when they were just a podcast, and eventually when they get back to it. Like, even Ben and Shivam couldn't, like, make... Like, they were, you know, on their podcast, Shivam and Wheeler Love Magic, they are so effusive about how much they love every set and will point out some of the worst cards you've ever heard and have something so nice to say about it. And they're going to be so excited about their relationship to a card. And then Wheeler and Shivam, when it came to the Kamigawa block, they were like, look, there's so many bad mechanics... And it's why people hate this set so much.
It's so bad.
Epic has to be the worst one.
You know what?
Epic is
one of the enduring. No, what's it? The white one. The white one was playable for a very brief moment. Yes, that one was playable very very short amount of time.
Yeah, well, that's because it's a tutor for an enchantment to the battlefield.
Yeah,
so it's as if you're still playing it.
Yeah,
but then there was also the blue one, which is you like bribery an opponent every turn.
Yeah,
search target opponent's library for an artifact, creature, enchantment, or land, which is like a land. Okay. I guess you better have good utility lands, but.
To cast all my spells with my epic.
Yeah. I get this once a turn, and I get one of your things. And it's like, why show up with the rest of the 99, you know?
Yeah.
It's so funny to me. But again, if there is a part of me that's like, I want to find a place for this. So when I put together Rakdos, I was like, this is probably the only place I'll ever have Undying Fury, and I have to cast it. That's the plan, right? Now, Aaron, you called into the show because you have a bolus story, have a pet peeve to discuss. What do you want to talk about?
Let me talk about my potential bullet story first, I suppose.
Okay, let's dive into that. Tell us a story where you may be the villain.
So, a lot of decks that I play, especially like a lot of my friends describe them as Rube Goldberg machines. I very, very, very often like playing decks with lots of game pieces, typically artifacts, that you gain incremental value over a long period of time by sacking them in and out. You know, think Jan Jensen, think anything with Dargo the Shipwrecker, which I like playing a lot. A bunch of small permanents that, again, grind over time. And I remember Rachel Weeks talked about a deck a long time ago, was Ratchet, after the Transformers set had come out. Mm. And Ratchet, like all the other Transformers, is a more than meets the eye flippy flop artifact legend.
Yeah, it's a lot of text to be reading. So go to scryfall.com and type in Ratchet. You'll find Field Medic in there and look at both sides. It's got a lot going on.
The important part is it flips back and forth, which you can control relatively easily by either gaining life or sacrificing artifacts, which again is right on my wheelhouse. So it's a mono-white deck that grinds, again, very incremental value over time by sacking stuff in and out. And I played it on camera and we have a video of it. And I remember playing through that game and just like trying to explain to the best of my ability what, because I'm a very fully transparent person, even while recording, obviously, but even in games that I play, I'm very fully transparent. And if you can see or have access to any information of my board or graveyard or whatever, mm-hmm. I will tell you, like, this is what I'm capable of doing with this information. Like, totally. Most players won't see it because they don't see all the minor interactions between a bunch of nonsense, which I don't expect them to. Right. So again, I'm very upfront with this type of stuff. But once it kind of gets going, and I'm seeing kind of the agony of my three opponents trying to figure out how to interact with Ratchet specifically. Like, how do I catch it when it's a creature? I'm like, well, you're just not going to. And like, they think they figure it out. I'm like, okay, well, now I can do this here. I'm like, yeah, I got some bad news for you. I'm still gonna get around it. It doesn't actually matter. You know, and then as the game's kind of slogging through it, I'm like, I just need to find a way to win the game. Like, I'm thinking, I'm just like sweating. I'm like, okay, this is awful. Like, this can't be a good experience. How do I end the game and just make it so like they're just not miserable anymore? Because like, I get, you know, Jim a couple times. He's like, okay, I think I got it. I think this is when I can do it. I'm like, no, I can just do this. And like, and then the game finally wrapped after, you know, I was able to find a way to end the game. But like, I often build a lot of these type of decks, and there's a line that I eventually cross that I'm having as much fun as I want, but I can just see the agony and people try to figure out all the moving parts. Maybe, you know, it doesn't always come across the greatest.
Okay. I hear you. I hear you. let's dissect this a little bit.
Yeah.
First of all, most importantly, everything you said, I love. that's the kind of deck I play. I built Mike and Will from Stranger Things to be a deck that I could see how many times I can bring Will back from the graveyard or whatever, just so I could see how many clue tokens I can make. I built Taste Opulent Oligarch so I can have a lot of clue tokens and sacrifice those a bunch. I built Rakdos so I could continuously have stuff in and out of graveyards. Lizolda is my aristocrats deck. Mm-hmm. I'm building Sorin to do kind of the same thing that you're talking about with Ratchet. Mm-hmm. I am 100% on board with this kind of deck, especially, and this is how my playgroup dealt with it. Now, we don't really get to play as much these days, but like when we were playing every Sunday, if somebody had a deck that was popping off, part of the fun was being like, I don't have anything to you. No, I don't have anything to you. No, okay. Okay, put your cards down, hands down. Let's try to work this out together so you can win or like go off the hardest. Mm-hmm. And we want to see it. You know what I mean? It's exciting, but it is also very much like this is one person's deck doing the thing. And there is this like weird pressure that comes from, and it's not a weird pressure. You still want people to have fun, but it's a pressure that comes from three other people at the table going, okay. And then another one. Okay. Yeah. And which one did you bring back this time? Okay. Did you, and if I target it with, okay, I can't target it with that. Okay. No, it was, go ahead. Like that, that's going to definitely take the wind out of your sails.
Yeah.
And I know that from experience as well.
The problem with this deck specifically, and decks that I, and again, this is like a philosophy thing. These decks don't just like win in a turn. Again, like I said, you grind over time, because I actually very much dislike the opposite of like building a bomb that like eventually
could not agree more.
Yeah, eventually you are dead regardless of what you do. Like you trigger something, everything's blowing up, you're all dead. So again, I find enjoyment in being able to eco value, but you know, my opponent's still like really watching me eco value over the course of 15 turns.
Right. I'm with you. It's like I built a ninth Dr. Claire Oswald Grixis upkeeps before Obeka came out, was like the big the big deal for that. But there was something so satisfying of being like, okay, my next upkeep is actually gonna be four upkeeps and it's gonna be a lot of fun for me. And then everybody's like, well, I don't have a board wipe for enchantments or anything. Okay, Mike, it's your turn. I'll be like, okay, I need to stack these triggers now. And it's like, it's a lot of fun because it's part of the thing that I love about it, which is the puzzle, and you bring it all up and you're working out, okay, well, I'm going to stack it like this for each of the upkeeps. This is how I'm going to do it for now. I don't even have to, you know, I don't have to lock that in, but for the sake of the table, I'm going to try to lock it in to streamline things. Then you got some triggers and all that stuff. You're like, this is the most fun, but it isn't winning me the game right away.
No,
it's most definitely progressing. It's going to do something. It's going to be so... Part of the excitement of playing Magic is that you get to these, like, you get to this point where you think, how do I get out of this? I hate a deck that's just going to be like, okay, Zealous Conscripts, Kiki Jiki. That's it. I had the two cards. I played a Jessica's Will, and now I have both of them out, and oops, you know, like, that's, to me, no thank you. But if I'm like, here are the six pieces that I need to win the game in three turns, and I'm going to do my best to defend them, and they're going to go off and do the thing, it puts a clock on the game that's kind of like saying, hey, if you can beat this, like, that's going to rule. Like, you're going to feel this wave of relief of some sort. Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
that to me is a very fun experience. I played this like Iroas deck that plays like Jockal Hops and all that stuff, Iroas Voltron kind of thing. And I still was able to be like, I'm still in the game with my Prosper deck, just trying to like, you know, and I hate land destruction. You know what I mean? It's not like a thing that I like doing, but it's so much fun to be like, I'm still in it, baby. Can't count me out. I'm making Cobalt tokens with like this Care Keep I just drew. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have enough to block Iroas, even though I'm going to die. Like, come on. So it's one of those things where like, that's what I want to give to my opponents. If I'm going off, I want you to be able to see like maybe a light at the end of the tunnel for your victory. And that's kind of what I'm getting from what you're saying here.
Yeah, absolutely.
You put a gun on the table, it doesn't mean that the gun is loaded. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so there are a million ways to disarm somebody that's got a gun on the table. But what happens is if somebody like, you know, grabs an axe and butchers the table, then that's less fun.
Yeah, if you just get a bazooka by somebody, I find it less interesting. For sure.
Yeah. Oh, before the game, I planted a C4 underneath, and it's going to go off when I, you know, oops. I'm with you, but I get it. Those turns can take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Those turns can take a long time, and then it becomes this, like, if you have too good of an engine to protect your stuff, that becomes a focal point, and it becomes a game of, like, this thing. And I can see why Ratchet... I mean, then again, Ratchet is an artifact at all times.
Yeah, he is
Bedevil,
that.
Chaos Warp, Bedevil, you know what I mean?
Ooh, like I love any Welding Jar. Big Welding Jar fan. I play that in a lot of decks. For maybe this reason.
Yeah, exactly. So you get to keep it around. Yeah. But it's one of those cards that you're like, ah, man, now we got to deal with this, and it's the value thing, and... But then at some point you just got to be like, okay, how do I get around it? Got to kill the player. Mm-hmm. I can kill the player. You know,
player removal is the best removal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here's my problem with this is that afterwards, because the way we bookend it, I think it's going to make for a fun discussion when we get back on the other side, because I very much see myself in your story. It being on camera is one of those things that is always tough, because Shivam talked about this when he did the podcast. He had a Nira deck, the Izzet deck that he had, that he was like, I just took like a 30-minute turn because I want to be authentic to the deck, you know, because I'm part of the CAG. I have to represent the game as it's meant to be played and respect all these triggers and all that stuff. And it's like, Oh yeah, I get that kind of pressure too. But if it were me, I'd be like, ah, whoops, Nira doesn't trigger this turn. Pass, you know. Like, I think there's an element of you keep the show a show. It's like when you play a stream and sometimes somebody's like, okay, I think I can win. Here's the fifth board wipe of the game in hour four. I think I can do it. Yeah, no, I think we should have wrapped at 90 minutes when I shouldn't have targeted your guy. You should have won. I regret.
Yeah, you know. It being a recorded gameplay episode certainly adds another angle, because you also want it to be a fun viewing experience. And you can read in some of the comments that a lot of people didn't like it. Like, you know, they're like, oh, if I wanted to watch a game of solitaire, I'd, you know, to watch something else, you know. So I get it. You know, not so I'm already very aware of it. You know, if there was a round clock in Commander, I'd be, you know, taking as much of it, everyone's time as possible.
100%. That's what Game Nights has done with the live episodes.
Yeah, I'm taking all of my time and your time and a little bit of yours. But yeah, a lot of the viewing experience, some people like it. Some people really enjoy it because maybe they like that type of thing as well. They like kind of watching it, you know, the wheels mm-hmm. turn. But then there's another subsection of people who are like, oh, I hate this. I don't want any part of this. And they let you know in the comments. So but even during the game, I'm like, there's like layers and layers of like, I hope people are just miserable about this. Like, I won't do it again, I promise. Like, please.
I'll say it's like, okay, I'm one of the guys that loves to see this happen. I want to see this kind of thing. Like, oh my God, you found the perfect cards to make an engine hum, and this car won't need to see a garage for years. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's killing it. But I could see how, especially if you're watching a game where the life is draining out of your opponent's eyes, you know, and you're like, ah. And then it becomes this like odd, there's this odd pressure in the vibe that can mm-hmm. really turn off an audience watching something like that.
For sure.
I guess what's important to note here, and this is something that'll come up in the bookends at the end here. It sounds like this is more of like a, okay, lesson learned type of deal, and less of a, this is less of a, okay, well, too bad. This is how it's going to go.
Oh, for sure. Like I've made definitely adjustments based on like, if I were to play something similar again, especially on camera. Have much more obvious ways to win.
yeah. I mean, it's
for the game to end, or you know, something to happen. At least.
I mean, it's very tempting. I mentioned Rassilon earlier. Like, it's very tempting to look at the Exsanguinate that I put in there, being like, I whatever, I don't really need this. And you're like, no.
Sometimes
double the Exsanguinate, those, you know? Have a game. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you're just like, no, I want the game to come down to me having 20 cards in my library because I spent all these upkeeps exiling the top, you know. But again, I could do that on my own. I can play test the deck.
Yeah, I go fish a lot. I do it a lot on my desk.
Dude, same. I got a day job too. Don't care for it. You know what happens when I'm on a call where somebody's like, hey, can you hold for a second? I'm like, sure thing. Pop open the play tester. It's time. So the discussion after the fact for this story is going to be something, because anybody who disagrees is going to be like, hey, Mike, we don't like what you're up to. And that's what that's going to feel like. But I'm with you. But I understand why there's like this, like, ah, I messed up. But I'm also like, hey, you designed a cool ass deck, man. That's pretty cool. You mentioned you had a pet peeve that you wanted to talk about, too.
Yeah. So this kind of ties into just from working at a game store for as long as I have. This happened pre-Commander. This happens a lot more post-Commander, and the internet, which again makes me sound mega old. But access to information was very different 15 years ago, right, than it is now. Yep. Is actually what you mentioned it earlier in this, is that I find that people that come in, they're like, hey, I have this like really cool like deck list, you know, I'm building the blue black zombies or whatever the case may be. And, you know, it's a decent Geralt and it's really neat. And I bought, and they're like asking me for cards, and I'm adding the card slash deck and whatever. And they're like, oh, but I also need Sanguine Bond, Exquisite Blood. I'm like, oh, why do you need those? He's like, well, just in case. What do you mean, just in case? So what if, you know, I'm not going to use it unless I have to use it. Like, well, what does that mean? When are you going to lose? He's like, well, maybe. It's like, Devin, you're going to use it all the time. Like, what do you mean? Yeah. You know, is that a lot of people kind of jam these kind of two card combos in, it's just in case. And again, maybe this is I have a lot of examples of this only because I happen to work at a store that sells cards.
Sure.
But there's tons of people who are like, yeah, I like just have this as a just in case or a backup, or you know, blah, blah, blah. It won't come up very often, I promise. And you know, Commander is 100 cards, it is Highlander, but you know, there's many ways to make sure you get a very consistent result every time. And then a lot of people end up kind of leveraging this a lot more often than they, that I think is fun. And, you know, I think it, again, takes away from, you know, he spent this time building this blue black zombie deck, which is really cool. I'm supposed to do this thing. And it's like, well, it's not working out, you know, these two cards.
Yeah. Slam the eject button.
Yeah.
That's, and you know, okay. So your point is the two card combo that kind of is the safety net that is also kind of boring. I'm putting words in your mouth and I'm going to say that. But you know what bothers me the most about this is those two cards could be two other thematically relevant cards. Those two cards could be replaced by something in your like considering pile. Those two cards can be another zombie lord that allows you to swing in without having to be worrying about a 2/2 getting in the way. It's kind of nuts to me how much those kind of things get included. I'm right with you. I don't even think we'll discuss this in the after show. It'll be about your story because I got to go off on this. I've been pretty vocal about I don't like tutors. Tutors to me are an affront to the game. Now, the format, rather. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some exceptions to it, which are, have you built a secret commander deck or like a secret partners deck?
Sure.
That, you know, your group hasn't allowed you to make honorary real partners in the command zone. Okay, well, run a couple tutors. You designed this deck to make it work. Are you running a deck that has one card that is exactly what you need at a specific, like, okay, one card. Land tutors, fine. If it makes the game not be a non-game, I'm with it. But if you're like, every game I'm going to entomb reanimate this, or I'm going to Vampiric Tutor, get my reanimate, get my entomb, gonna get the thing, game's over before it starts. It's not for me. I can't stand it. I don't get why you would put so much work into 100 cards just to play the same four. And I understand it when it comes to CDH because that's the format. It's like you gotta have the exact perfect response to stay in the game and it's so interactive and it's so like that's a different beast. I'm talking about if I'm rocking up and I'm not a CDH guy. And we're like talking about how much we love Magic, how much we love playing our game, this and that. We're like, okay, I got this deck. It's really weird. And I'm really excited to play it. It doesn't do anything till like turn 7. But like, hopefully we can get to turn 7 and I do something cool. And they're like, yeah, I got this other deck that's like based on this meme. And you're like, okay, cool. And then you sit down and that deck's like, okay, every staple is out. Mystic Remora, Mystic Study, like all these staple cards that you're seeing. And you're like, okay, I can't wait to see the new thing. It's like Demonic Tutor, two card combo, it's over. And you're like, it's turn 4. We talked about turn 7, maybe.
Yeah.
You know? And do you mean more so because it's like just in case? Like that attitude?
I get a lot of people who frame it to me as like a backup or just in case. This isn't like my primary win condition. I'm playing, you know, 98 other cards that do something entirely different, especially when it's not on theme. Like, at least when someone's building a vampire deck, like, okay, well, these cards are like on brand, so sure.
Sure.
But otherwise, you know, and there's lots of other like two card examples that are obviously very not what they're trying to do. And it's just they just want this like leg up just in case. Cause I get a lot of people, again, this is probably more the like running a store side of it that like, they either want to feel like they can hang with people who are playing more powerful decks, that they have this like silver bullet that they can feel like they can compete, you know?
Sure.
So I understand some amount of it, but I think that you're just going to get a better experience if you just like play decks that are more like, you just try to get to your end goal. But there's a lot of people who also equate, which is again, the pet peeve-ish, which is a separate thing entirely, but equate winning with having a good time. Right.
Agreed.
I lost. Yes. I didn't have a good time. I it was not fun. Where like the, you know, whether it's cheesy, like the storytelling of like what your deck does, I think is like the most enjoyable thing of Commander, especially, right? Like it's kind of you build your deck to be a self-expression of what you want to do and like how I would do it as a player. And then if I lose, as long as I did my thing, like I had a good time, I'm not upset about it. Like,
yeah. Could not agree more. It's the philosophy that like the winning isn't everything, because if you went in winning is everything, then you're talking about like three of you not being happy.
You're playing the wrong format.
Exactly. And like going to CDH, if that's, and then even then, like you're still going to lose so much of the time. What I think, to the point that you made of like, I can't really hang with these decks, cut those two cards and put in interaction. Like, put in something that'll let you hang. Not like this automatic lie win button. And then there's, like, also decks where thematically something will fit, like Exquisite Blood and Sanguine Bond are perfect for a Sorin Markov deck, like the Sorin of House Markov that was just in Modern Horizons 3 that I'm brewing. But you think I'm going to pop in Exquisite Blood? No, it's just going to be Sanguine Bond, not the other half, because I'm already gaining life. I'll be fine, you know? It's thematically, it works to have them both in, but like, why would you want to do that? Where you're automatically like, okay, I made so much mana off of Nykthos and Cabal Coffers, I slammed these two, and then the next person to lose a life is a loser, you know? So it bothers me to think that people aren't having fun unless they win. That is also, I would say, a pet peeve of mine.
Oh, sure.
We did an episode with AD DeFazio about this, which is the fun part is giving yourself little goals. One of the first games I played with these pals of mine online in a Discord server that we put together for like when COVID was just lockdowns after lockdown. I played Saheeli the Gifted, which was like the last time I ever played Saheeli the Gifted. And I was like, it's my only artifact deck, so I'm going to put Tron in here. And all three years of lands, if I was like, guys, I can't do anything this game. Nothing's working. I'm clearly going to die the moment somebody decides. If I assemble Tron, if I get all three Urza lands out, I will be so stoked. And so the whole game is like, I'm like trying to draw into like Expedition Map and like I'm trying to bring back Expedition Map and I'm like working hard to make it happen. And AD was like, my goal with Guillaume Master Chef is to feed 10 creatures. So you know what I mean? It's like, we're out here thinking like my fun is coming from this extra goal. Like I'll build, like I said, I built Mike and Will to be like, how many times can I bring Will back and forth from the graveyard? How many clue tokens can I make the table make?
I have Mike and Lucas and Luris.
Will and Lucas and Luris.
Yeah. I have the 2+ the companion because that's again one of my pet decks that I have, but all 2 or less.
That's so fun.
Spells included. I made it so to make it more restriction. Really? Yeah. So like I can play Skolnik Rift because it costs 2, but I can't play Wrath of God because it costs 4.
Fair.
Yeah.
That's fun as hell. That extra restriction is brutal too. It's like that cuts out a lot.
Yeah, but it justifies me playing cards that are otherwise a higher power level that can get away with because I'm only playing 2s or less, you know.
But, there you go.
Yeah.
See, but that's what I'm saying is like, okay, this is the Smothering Tithe point from before. It works perfectly for the deck. I'll allow it. You know what I mean? It's awesome. Yeah, I mean, the idea of like the Ninth Doctor deck is how many upkeeps can I possibly get to? These are the fun little goals that you can give yourself to make yourself enjoy a game more.
Yeah.
You're with a group of people. You want to have a lot of fun. And if your fun only comes from one moment that is marked at the end and you're like trudging along, I don't know, buddy. There's a lot of other things to do with your time.
You should probably take a look at CEDH. CEDH is like so different. It's such a different game.
So different.
Yeah. I like both elements. Like the
fair.
The grindier, the spike side of me does enjoy or miss tournament Magic. I played a lot of it pre-playing a lot of casual Magic. Like because I've always played some version of casual, whether it's like we played a format called 250 or 5-color. Like that was 20 years ago. And then up until early 2000, before I played a lot of Commander 5 years ago, I made cube content. Cube was a huge thing that I did again because the idea of building lists is which carries on into Commander is my favorite thing to do. And oh my god, I forgot my point.
You were talking about the competitive versus the casual.
Yes, I used to play a lot of competitive Magic. I used to play, I used to travel to GPs a lot. I qualified for the Pro Tour once upon a time. And that put like, there's still the part of me that misses that. Right. And as I've gotten older, I have a lot more going on. Like most people do. I don't have time to dedicate to that. And CEDH kind of scratches that itch. It fills that void that is like, I am playing to win. Even though Commander still is a social element. That lets me do the most powerful things. I don't feel bad about it. Like no hold bars. I'm doing these things. And like, you could argue that CEDH is, even though you can do all these things that the 2-card combos and whatnot, it does have not a narrow amount of actually good ones, but it does, again, scratch that itch that regular Commander doesn't, but I enjoy both of them for completely opposite reasons.
Agreed. I think for me, if there's a competitive itch to scratch, is like, I normally get it when there's a new set release. So it's a pre-release comes around at the exact right time for me, and I get sweaty at a pre-release. You know, I don't get sweaty to the point where it's like, I don't need to cut your deck. If you present your deck, I'm going to tap the top. Look, if you're cheating at a pre-release, how bad do you need this?
You know what I mean? More than I do, it's fine.
Exactly. And so to me, it's like, I'm not sweaty in that way, but I am going to be like, I want to make the best play. I want to win. I want a 4-0. This is what I'm here for. Yeah, 100%. And I'm putting together this deck from like packs that I had no choice in this. This was given to me. I'm making these quick decisions. I only have an hour. It takes me months to put together a deck. Like, this is the competitive itch scratching, right?
Yeah.
Modern Horizons 3 is the first time I've ever felt drawn to playing Modern, and it was because of that Flage deck. And I'm just like, maybe this is for me. And then immediately I'm like, oh, it's already changing so much. I can't. I don't have enough time to follow.
Yeah, I think Jim was maybe the person that said it. Maybe a lot of people have said it in the past, but like, restriction breeds creativity, right? Like, in playing limited, you like you mentioned, you work over the choice of the card selection you had to choose from, but you still want to do it to the best of your ability. And building these kind of restrictions into Commander kind of carry over the same things. Like, I am playing intentionally with maybe a worse set of cards or within a restriction that would force me to play maybe less optimal cards, but I still want to do it to the best of my ability. And I think that's a great way to show you a skill as a player or as a deck builder, as opposed to just like, hey, I built this really fun deck and then just shoehorned in this bazooka and, you know, here we are.
Yeah. That was Rachel Weeks's point when she did the podcast. She pulls her punches into deck building. Because when she plays, I'm going for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hate when people say like, I'm just not going to do it. Just do it. Like, it's fine. Just end the game. It's okay.
Yeah. I mean, if we're 10 minutes into the game, maybe don't end it immediately, but you know.
Yeah.
That's part of why I haven't built Slimefoot and Squee yet, is because every version of that deck is going to have the most loops. And as much as I love that, I'm afraid of what your story brought out, right? Which is, it's such a resilient card. It's going to keep making things happen. You know, it's hard to get rid of and interact with. And some people hate that at a table, but like I said, with my playgroup, and I hope some people adopt this, like, trust me, I would love it. I would love it if my old playgroup, if we get together more often and somebody's got this crazy engine and we're all like, let's help you figure it out. That's just so much fun. If you haven't done that in a playgroup with like, look, it doesn't even have to be with a trusted playgroup. You can be meeting up at an LGS and propose it. Like, you're all there because you love Magic. You're all there because you love to see how this crazy game can look when all these elements are different. You're putting together a deck of 100 cards that needs to be singleton, based around restrictions of color, all this stuff. You want to see something cool, for sure.
Absolutely.
And so if something cool is slapping you in the face, and it's taking a while to get there, maybe you can help out. Maybe you can like, hey, isn't it fun that we're all doing this together? And maybe that'll also recontextualize a moment where you feel like you've won. Like, you might be losing, but man, how fun is it that you were the one to be like, oh, okay, so this interacts with this like this. I don't know if you noticed that. And you're like, oh, this changes everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Magic's exciting. And it's such a fun game. And I'm glad we get to play it. I'm glad that there are people out there like you that really value the synergy of it all, the finding a home for a card, and also you embody a spirit of the format that I identify with in a big way. So I really appreciate you taking the time and hopping on a call with us. I think that'll do it for our chat. Do you want to tell people where they can find you or what you want them to check out?
Yeah, I guess just at the Spike Feeders on YouTube. I have very little to no social media presence outside of retweeting Spike Feeder content. So you can just follow the Spike Feeders directly on Twitter. You know, it's just get the middleman out of the way. But please check us out on YouTube at the Spike Feeders. We release videos every week. Wrapping up even more than that lately. it's great. Please check us out there.
All right, you heard it here. You got to check out the Spike Feeders. We're going to head back to the booth and speak to Solani and Morgan about whether or not Aaron is the ballless. what a pleasure it is to talk to Aaron from the Spike Feeders. Oh my God, what a delightful chat. Truly somebody that I admire in his deck building. It's all over the Spike Feeders channel. Please make sure to subscribe to them on YouTube and watch those gameplay videos. They're so much fun. The energy's right. And the deck lists are always available. So make sure to get a look at those deck lists. You'll find some real gems, especially if you're building some of these guys. Like I mentioned the Modern Horizons 3 Commander game, and that was a fun one, and I highly recommend you check it out. So thanks again, Aaron. I really, really appreciate you calling in. Really big fan of your work. And now we're back with Jake, our sweet boy Jake Brown, talking on, we're going to be talking about whether or not Aaron is the bolus. But before we do that, Jake, this is your first time with us for a bolus verdict, so I have to break down the voting. So Morgan would break it down saying, normally, what back when Solani was with us, Morgan gets one vote, yep, and it's worth 1 point. Michael gets one vote, and it's worth 1 point. And then Mike gets one vote, but with 3 points. So it's much the same here, except you are Jake, and you get one vote, and it's 1 point, and I get one vote, and it's 3 points.
They're all what Johns? John Voights?
I keep saying Voight. I it's because I'm smiling.
It's great. I'd say go with, I like the new Voight system.
The Voight system. Just get America, get out and Voight. Except he's awful enough that his daughter's cut off all ties with him. I would, and also if you've seen him in Anaconda, he's a real prick. I don't care for John Voight.
I've learned so much about John Voight lore that I did not know, and I had to like this tweet zero times.
and you learned it on a Magic the Gathering podcast, baby.
I love it.
That's right, the only Magic the Gathering podcast ever. I love doing that bit. Because we are not the only one by a long stretch.
What?
In fact, we're not even the... No, Jake, you got to hear... Check this out. The Command Zone.
Wild.
Their podcast.
I thought they were a YouTube you thing.
Howling Salt Mine. Oh, they're both. Howling Salt Mine is also a good podcast. You got the Social Contract also out there. You've got the MTG Goldfish guys. They got a podcast. They got two, actually.
So there's like four. That's cool.
Well, there's Shivan and Wheeler Love Magic. And Shivan's got Casual Magic also. And then there's...
look for me on an upcoming episode of Casual Magic.
The Heroes Blade Vibe Check. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You got one? You got one in the tank?
Hell, I'll see you soon. Fun.
Hell, yeah. Anyway, there's a lot of Magic podcasts, but none of them are talking about John Voight. That's the bonus you get from us, baby.
That's anyway, the chatter I hear. Why isn't anyone talking about John Voight?
And then you get to be like, wait till next week you're going to get an episode. Oh, my God. Now I'm realizing why we need to have Morgan on the bookends instead of a buddy that I riff with nonstop and being little bad boys about it, because now all I want to do is be bad. I want to be bad.
We're a producer's nightmare.
Jake, we got to get on topic. Let's talk about it. Aaron called in. You listened to the chat. I need to know, what are your thoughts, and is Aaron the bolus? He's got a question. It's like, am I the bolus for taking a really long turn? And then we talked about two-card combos for a little bit. So let's get into it.
Yeah, I thought this was very much like watching the last two-thirds of Step Brothers, where you guys were just like, how can we agree more?
Like, I know.
This is such like a mic-coded question that I was like, totally. How will this, how will we ever get to disagreements?
Yeah, I mean, and then again, it's not because I am so affable and agreeable that I'm going to agree with everything.
Nope.
It's just that Aaron and I are on the exact same page.
It's what you play. It was listening to two healthcare CEOs just talk about how much they love bureaucracy.
Whoa, 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 whoa. it was definitely both of us being like, yeah, I love a long turn where a lot of stuff happens. Isn't that fun?
I'm here to represent for the every person who has been on the other side of the table from this and am just like, no, especially when you guys have the gall of being like, sometimes your win can be helping us figure out our turn. It's just like, oh.
I mean, I was talking as me being on the other side. I'm talking, when I said that, I was on your end of things, because to me, that is fun.
I know, but I've been in the middle of those turns where I'm like, can I help you speed this up? Because here's my problem is that a lot of these like literal, like big game action tinkery turn decks give you the what's for dinner problem where you have to start with a decision, right? And the decision is like, what are we going to eat tonight? And so you're like, I don't know, Italian, Thai, Indian. And so it's just like, okay, well, we'll just go with Indian. Well, that doesn't answer anything because now you have to pick a restaurant and there are like 20 restaurants that you could order from.
Yeah.
And so every one of your little tinkery decisions just leads to even more decisions. And then those, you're not even to a menu yet. Are you going to have appetizers? What are we picking out? The menu is always bigger than the number of restaurants, bigger than the food, you know, genre you're going to eat. It's, that's what drives me nuts. It just
sounds delicious.
You would.
Yeah, I know.
Listen, if you can do this in an efficient manner, you're like, we're having Italians, we're eating it. Joe's Pizza by Kohl's, and I'm getting a Stromboli. Great. Okay. Sequencing's the most important thing. And I think in Aaron's case, Aaron can play a turn, comes from that more competitive background, now plays more casual. Right. I enjoy that. I enjoy people that can see three new cards and make one quick decision.
Totally. And I see, here's you touched on something very interesting that I feel like needs to be highlighted. Sequencing is important, yes, but so is knowing your deck.
Yeah.
And so when Aaron's talking about this deck, it's one that he put together for the stream, maybe got a chance to goldfish it a couple of times or maybe play it once before, and then took it to the camera and that's it. But, you know, for someone like me, I've got all these decks that like love to do a bunch of dumb little things all it. Boop, 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 a bunch of little actions, and I love that. But you can't tell me nothing, buddy. I'm making those actions. I know what's up. I'm looking at my hand for like 2 seconds and going, okay.
Boom.
And here we go. And a one, and a two, and a one, two, three, four. And then it's this, that. And then the only deck I've had trouble with is my Rakdos the Muscle deck because it takes from other people's decks. And that adds some complications.
Okay, so if you're Rakdos the Muscle deck, you can maybe streamline that a little bit, make it a little less tinkery.
So the idea is like, I'll do that as an effort to like, just get the most so I can keep milling them out. Essentially at a certain point, it becomes a mill deck, or it's like, I'm looking for one particular thing and I'm going to find it in your deck, 'cause I know it's there, you know? So it's just like trying to find more ways to get to that point. But Rakdos the Muscle is a deck that I have been enjoying a lot, but should definitely be working on making sure that maybe I'm exiling more of my deck than my opponents.
Sure, because then you're like, I already have enough complexity fatigue against the, like...
Oh, sure.
What was the example? Like, the green, white, red... Like, the green, white, red artifact commander. Who am I thinking of?
Ultra Magnus? Green, white, red?
No, sorry, No, Mardu.
Oh, Jan Jensen.
Yeah. So, like, I have enough complexity fatigue playing against Jan Jensen where I'm like, all right, do I need to break this up now? What is going on here? Are you even executing this properly? I have to make sure that, like, you're getting your counts right, that, like, things like that, where I'm like, I hate feeling like I'm turned into the bureaucrat because I need to pay attention to all of this stuff. And maybe you're doing it a little sloppy, and like, it's not intentional. No one's a perfect player, but like, that's what drives me nuts. 'Cause I'm like, all right, what are we doing here? I don't want to be ombudsman of the table.
Right. I hear you. So I understand if you don't like that, or if that's not on your list of things that you enjoy when it comes to having to deal with this kind of thing. Because it is something that, like, I personally enjoy the idea of, like, I'm locked in the game. I am paying attention to everything. I want to know what's happening so that I can, like, be on top of it. And that's important to me. That's important to my play experience. I love that. But I get when people don't like it. And that's why if you're at a table with me, know that that role is kind of covered. You know what I mean? I'm here to be part of that. Like, hey, this trigger, you missed it. You know, great. I'm on it, you know, or hey, I'm doing this. I can shortcut this way. If you'd like it explained, I would love to explain it to you. No, I'm shortcutting. And then, you know, so like I know my decks well enough to do that kind of thing, or maybe I'm playing in an environment that's a little bit more forgiving where I can take the time to learn it a little bit more. But I've usually goldfished a lot. And so when it comes to talking to Aaron about this, I'm so on board with the kind of decks that have a lot going on, because eventually it means that like you're seeing something that can only be done here. You know, I just last night thought of a combo in my head and had to brew a deck around it. So I pulled up Archidect and I started brewing the Master Transcendent, the Fallout Sultai backup commander, which apparently is like tier 4 CDH viable or whatever, but it's either way.
Quit tumbling on yourself. Together,
I put together like a 6-card combo and I was like, this could work, you know? And it's obviously got Phyrexian Altar in it, clearly. But then you've got like, okay, so you got Intruder Alarm, Mesmeric Orb, Haunted Crossroads, Phyrexian Altar, the Master, and then a creature that you want to bring back. And there you go. Hey, Haunted Crossroads puts it back on after you sacrificed it. You mill it again because of the orb, or it's Thornbite Staff instead of the alarm. Either way.
You know what I like about this is like, I love a deck that works like this where it's like Memento, where you're just leaving little notes all over your playmat.
Uh-huh. Yeah, buddy.
And then I go, oh my God. Oh, and then you see it and you look back at all the notes and you go, oh, all this makes sense now. You know what I don't like is watching Memento for like the fifth time. I'm like, okay, we got it. It was cool. It was really cool. I get it. So I always warn people before they do these kind of brews that like your replay value may vary.
Yeah, and you know what? If you're playing with me, hell yeah. I played a game the other night where I played my Taysa Opulent Oligarch deck, and I had a lot of pieces online where it was like, okay, currently have 6 pieces interacting with each other when I do one thing. So if you want to disrupt, you got to do it. And then so the table, it ended up being a bit of an arch enemy situation because they let me go too easy. But then I just ended up taking the win the turn before another guy took it. And, you know, it ended up being like, hey, I can. So here's the thing. I can win this turn. I'm gonna. Do you have any interaction? Here it is. The win. And they were like, yeah, we can't do anything about that. I'm like, sick. And you know how I won? Combat.
I'd say, combat, okay, win. Now you're winning me back.
There we go. Yeah. You didn't think Dollmaker's Shop and the Porcelain Gallery could do
could
do anything in that Taysa deck? Yeah, baby. All star slamming.
You're getting anyway, too much.
It sounds like I know what my vote is, but Jake, how are you leaning here?
It's tough because I don't want to tell anybody that they're the bowl simply because of the deck that they like to play. Here, I think it all comes down to how you play it. So I am going to begrudgingly vote that Aaron is not the bolus, but that most people playing Aaron's decks are.
Okay, interesting. So here's where you're gonna get me. You check this out, you're gonna love this. I love this play style, and I think if you're playing this play style, that's awesome. I'm with it, I'm about it. It's everything I love about Magic. It's the way I love to play. Aaron, your deck building rules, I love watching the spike feeders and see somebody go off like this. In this story, given that we have reactions from others, and you yourself acknowledge that Ratchet just kept doing too much without a win con, bolus. Jake was trying not to tip it by covering his mouth in shock and rolling his chair away from the microphone. But I have to say, in this story, and I think Aaron would agree, bolus story. You didn't pack a more obvious win con. You spun your wheels until it just wasn't, you know, you kind of deadlocked it. It is what it is. A cardinal sin when building these kinds of decks is not having an out. And yep. That is why every one of these decks needs to be goldfished. And especially if you're like me and you don't with tutors. I'm sorry, Ken. I don't with tutors. I don't like it. I'm not going to go into my deck and look for something to win the game. I got to draw into it. I want the deck to show me what's up. So that's where I'm at. Aaron, in this story, the bolus, but in every other way, a friggin' mensch. I tell you what. What a champ. I love you. I can't wait to get some games in. I cannot wait for us to cumulatively take up most of the game clock doing our thing. And I can't wait to sit across from you and be like, this is crazy. This is, you did this into that, and then there's this? That's nuts! I can't wait. I'm thrilled about it. Sincerely. Absolutely thrilled about it.
So, I'm not. Aaron, I rue the day.
So next time we play, Aaron, Jake, and I will need a fourth, and we'll all figure out how to play these decks. But shout out again, Eric. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you so much for calling in and having a chat with me. Jake, thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolute pleasure. I miss you, buddy.
I miss you too, man. I got to stay with Jake when I was out in Denver in September, and it hasn't been long, and yet it feels like too long, and I already miss it.
My buddy to the north,
sweet sweet boy. I can't wait to see you again. Is there anything that you want to say before we get out of here? Any parting thoughts?
Just hey, be good to each other. Happy New Year. I don't know when this comes out.
Nice. This should be out right before the Christmas holiday. I'll tell you what. So December 17th. And you know what? We might not have an episode before the New Year. How about that? We'll see. Might have a bonus episode. Might not have a full bolt cast episode, but we'll see. Okay. It's the holidays and everybody's super busy. So I don't want to schedule things. So
what I'll plug is that on the 21st, I have my year-end awards. So we'll have
nice.
The clubbies, and we'll be giving out a ton of awards. Best podcast is up. You can nominate people. Listen, this is going to be written on the 20th. So taking nominations, taking votes up until the final, until Saturday morning, the 21st.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, that's what's up. So make sure to follow at manaclub.substack.com. Get in there and vote, I guess, or nominate.
Or void.
Void, god damn it. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us anywhere you get your podcast because you're already listening, but commandersherald.com, edhrec.com, linktree.com/amithebolus. Linktree.com/MikeCarrozza, MikeCarrozza. Morgan Sanchez is Indigo Gentleman on Instagram, on Twitter, and on Blue Sky. Make sure to follow her. And we'll be back next time with another episode of Am I the Ballcast? And till then, it's time to scoot the day. Have a good one, everybody. Be good to each other. Be nice. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. Pick up some good habits. And bye.